Okay, I think everything is set. So welcome everybody to the Self-Health Movement Teleseminar. This is Dr. Lorianne Gertensen, founder of the Gertensen Institute, where our mission is to create a self-health movement that empowers and supports people to take charge of their own health, their healing, and their well-being. And the self-health movement is about how your lifestyle choices and your level of self-knowledge and self-awareness can impact your health. And these are conversations, and they are designed to help you make positive change in your life, because we know that when we can change our lives, we can also change the world. So we're really excited to bring this program to everybody each month. So today we welcome our guest, Craig Tunder, who's going to speak about the topic of the gift of love, exploring connection and understanding. That just sounds so exciting to me. And I'm really excited about this topic because relationships are just so important to all of us, and so often problems arise in relationships and we just get frustrated, and sometimes it just seems like things are getting worse. So I'm happy to have Craig Tunder on today. He's going to help us to understand a little better about how to create a healthy relationship and what it is that often gets in the way. So welcome, Craig. You're on the line with us, yes?
Thank you. It's an honor to be on the line with you.
Okay, great. So this is just going to be a great topic, and I just wanted to let you know that so many people have been letting me know that they are really interested in this, and it's really an important topic for them. So I'm excited that we're going to explore this together here. So I wondered if you might share a little bit about your story, because I know some of it, but I'd like you to share it with our listeners, about how you happened to get involved in this field.
Absolutely, yeah. It's funny, I was listening to Tri Gertensen's interview earlier and really related to her story about how my passion for the work came from my desire to heal myself, because back in the day I was absolutely terrible at relationship. People I dated referred to me as aloof and unloving, and in fact, I think the worst I got was the boy in the bubble. And yeah, that was a fun one. And it was a frustrating thing for me, because I even back then went to seek couples therapy, and the therapist I saw had to offer a lot of standard communication skills around I statements and paraphrasing. And it didn't really help much. And the whole time, I could kind of feel like something's just off here. Something's not just right. And just trying to cover up these things with the rules on how to talk about it honestly made it worse sometimes. And so even though it was just kind of bad at being in a relationship, I knew that somehow it was important, that there was something about connection that was kind of vital to being alive in this world. So one day I decided I just really need to get this figured out for myself. And so I called up some people that I knew who were really good at relationships, and a couple of therapists I had known from grad school, because I was just getting out of grad school at the time, and began to study this, and studied everything from flirting to what it's like to hold your partner's hand on their deathbed. And just kind of blew me away with all the information that I just didn't know about, and kind of stunning at times. There were times I'd be reading books on things, and I just have to set the book down, because I was like, oh, my God. That's why that was happening. I could have saved that relationship and that relationship and that relationship.
Oh my.
And so that really kind of brought me to this place one day where I was figuring out what I wanted to do as a therapist. And a friend of mine said, well, Craig, you know, your passion's in relationship. You really should look at couples therapy. And that's how I got into the field that I am today.
I love that story. It's so many times, you know, when we get to do our life's work, it is built in, you know, where our passions lie and some of the things that we really needed to figure out on our own. So thank you for sharing that with us. So I know that one of the things that you do with couples in your practice is help them build a model of love and relationship, sort of as a foundation for building that relationship. Can you tell us a little bit more about how that works?
Yeah, there's, you know, a lot of couples, they'll call me up because they're in distress and they're arguing, and they want communication skills to just kind of fix this communication problem that they're having. But a healthy relationship is much more than that. There's a way that good communication actually comes from the good relationship. And it's important for couples to kind of recognize certain values of what successful couples hold. A couple of them, you know, when I was thinking of which ones we highlight, I was thinking of fairness, neutrality, accessibility, responsiveness, and compassion. And it's really from this place when couples really kind of understand these values and then simultaneously really understand each other and develop what I call the owner's manual. It's from that place that they're able to actually create the relationship of their dreams. And it's actually once they get to kind of embody these values in themselves that communication becomes more natural and easy, and it doesn't have to be about forced rules. It's more about coming from the heart in a place of compassion for each other and for the self.
So how do people get to understand these values to begin with? I mean, are these the values they set for themselves, or are these ones that you're presenting as important to have and hold in your relationship?
Oh, that's a good question. I would say there's two answers to that. One is that there are certain values that I really find are important for couples to look at and really chew on and really look at their relationship and hold this intention and this vision of the relationship around what's the social contract going to be, right? What's going to be important about how we treat each other and how we treat the relationship itself. In that, I let the couples figure out exactly how that's going to look best for them. And I also let them find their own values as well, because everyone's going to have a kind of a nuance of what they want to create with their partner. The reason I picked the ones that I did is kind of cornerstones to these things. For instance, when we look at fairness and mutuality, I mean, this is a big piece, including in setting up the contract of what the values of the relationship is going to be. Because one of the things you have to get as a couple is that when you bond with another person, you are tied with them. And you know those partner exercises that they do and kind of team-building things where hold each other's hand and you lean back?
Right, those trust exercises. Huh?
Those trust exercises, yeah. Well, there's a way that there's this, it's not only trust, but it's also mutual support, right? And couples have to get, if one goes down, both go down, right? There is, in fact, there's a lot of ways that one of the kind of common fights couples get into is the who's right fight. And there's a cute saying about that, that in a relationship you can either be right or you can have love, and you have to choose. Right?
Mm, that's wonderful. You can either be right or have love. I like that.
Because if you're right, you've made your partner wrong. And if you've made your partner wrong, they're not really going to be in a loving place because they're not really going to feel accepted and safe and cared about by you.
So it's not me versus you, it's us.
Yes, yeah, and that's a huge piece, is getting couples out of the I or the you, right? And by that I mean like when couples get into adversarial roles with each other, a couple things can happen. One, they can go into kind of attack role, right, where, you know, you're a jerk and you're this and you're that and you're this and you need to change in order to make this relationship work, right? And when our partners are saying those things to us, it just doesn't feel good. Right? We feel under fire, and it doesn't create safety and security in the relationship. The other end of it is that people can really, you know, especially in relationships, there's a sensitivity in relationships that doesn't happen in other relationships in life. You know, if the bus driver doesn't say good morning to us as we get on the bus in the morning, that's not going to be a problem, but when our partner isn't saying good morning to us in the morning, that can be really painful. And so what happens when couples fall into this place of pain is that they're feeling hurt and they're feeling like they need to be heard. But they're also in a place where they're so hurt, it's hard to actually extend oneself out and listen to the other person. And so when you get two people in that place where it's like, well, I'm hurt and I need you to listen to me, then nobody's really listening to each other. And this idea of fairness and mutuality and how to create that the win-win that people talk about goes out the window. So one of the big things, I push this with couples, is you've got to get to this place of the we, this place of, I like how one of my teachers, Stan Pachtin, puts it, that what's good for me must also be good for you. Right? If it's not the case, we're not really dealing with fairness and mutuality.
That's excellent. Yeah, I can definitely understand how that's a totally different perspective.
Yeah, yeah.
So what are some of the other values?
So with accessibility and responsiveness, one of the things that we're looking at here is this idea of emotional connection. And, you know, this is a big thing that comes up with couples around feeling connected. And, you know, unfortunately, sometimes one person is the advocate for connection and the other person isn't quite sure where that person's coming from. And that has to do with personality styles that we can talk about later, these things called islands and waves. But with emotional connection, what's important to get here is that as humans, we're herd animals, really, right? I mean, we form communities and we form partnerships and we couple. There's a way that our worst punishments have to do with like excommunication from the tribe or solitary confinement, right? And this is because the way we're wired, you know, being herd animals and whatnot, is that connection, and especially emotional connection, equals safety, right? When we feel connected to a person, we feel comfortable that this person is accessible, that this person is responsive to us, this person cares about us, this person has our best interests in mind, it's this place of comfort and support. Mm-hmm. And this is paramount in psychology to even the development of self itself, right? It helps us define a sense of self as being lovable, as being deserving of care, of being competent versus inadequate, of being someone who can trust others. Like, is the world I live in a trustworthy place? Or am I even a trustworthy person? Can I even trust myself? Dependability as well. Can I depend on others? Am I someone people can depend on? Right? All this is learned in relationship with this type of connection. And so one of the things we really want to get couples to recognize is that this emotional connection actually gives us strength. It's not something that's weak, right? Needing each other, supporting each other, depending on each other isn't a weakness, right? It's actually a strength that bonds us together and makes us more than we are as individuals. It moves us out of this place where, in this culture, we have this big thing about individuality. But there's a lot of ways that our concept of individuality is skewed, and it's more of a pseudo-individuality. It's this individuality from a place of, I can't really depend on others. I can only depend on myself, so I'm just going to pull myself up by my bootstraps and do it myself and make my own life by myself. Right? This idea of a different kind of individuality comes from feeling safely connected to people, feeling emotionally connected to people, feeling like my needs are met, that I have a hearth to come home to. This idea that my support is so strong that I can go out into the world and risk because I know I have people to catch me, that people I can fall back on. And this is something that we really want couples to understand, is it's not shameful to need each other, that actually this is a way that we can bond with each other. And part of how we want people to work towards this then is to really teach couples to first just accept needs, and then second of all, how do I send clear signals? Right? How do I really get my partner to understand what it is that I'm really needing from him or her? And then as a partner, how do I attune? How do I connect with my partner and really understand my partner? And how do I respond in the most effective way? Right? Quick kind of tangent on that piece is, you're familiar with the Golden Rule?
The Golden Rule, do unto others.
Do unto others, as you'd have, yeah, as you'd have them do unto you.
Right.
Worst advice you could give a couple ever, right? It'll just blow up in your face. Because there's kind of a cute story to explain this. It's so, like, if you and I were coupled, and if you equated love and connection with tomato soup. Tomato soup, yes.
Okay.
And I connected love. It's a silly metaphor, but go with me.
We'll go with it.
If I connected it with chicken noodle soup, well, according to the Golden Rule, if I give you chicken noodle soup all day long and you give me tomato soup all day long, Well, the two of us are going to go to bed at night feeling like I gave and gave and gave, and I didn't get anything in return but this crappy stuff that my partner was doing. I don't know what that's about. And then we're going to end up feeling resentful, feeling like I do all the work, feeling like you don't really care about me, and intimacy starts flying out the window, and next thing you know, we're fighting with each other.
I can definitely see how that's happened in my life before. I'm sure many people probably have experienced that same thing.
Yes, yeah. Well, and here's a tricky piece about it. When that comes up for folks, when we don't have that feeling of excessiveness and responsibility, the way we're wired is we go into this place of feeling alone or deserted or rejected, which leads to this anxiety and then this sadness. And one of the ways that people kind of empower themselves in life is through anger, right? I mean, anger kind of gets this really bad rap because it's equated with behavior such as violence and things like that. But anger is really the body just mobilizing itself towards a value, right? And so if I'm not feeling connected with you in a certain way, right, and I start to get anxious that you don't really love me or that you're going to abandon me or that I'm not good enough for you or something along those lines, right? Or I'm feeling the pain of like, oh, I'm really wanting this connection and you're not giving it to me, this hurts, right? These are all values that have to do with lovingness. And so what I'm going to do is I'm going to start to get upset with you because you're not giving me the lovingness that I'm wanting. And so I'm going to go into some coping behavior around that, which is ending up actually going to backfire and it's going to hurt you in some way. And so, you know, a big piece that couples need to recognize is that when you start to get frustrated with each other, most likely there's something of value at stake, and the two of you aren't able to create a connection in that value, and it's leading to frustration. But there's all kinds of deeper pains and anxieties and fears, and again, the feelings of aloneness and rejection underneath it. And those are the things that couples need to talk about. It's not just about using I statements, right? It's what you're actually going to communicate to your partner that's going to be important.
So sometimes you may not even know what that is yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. They're one of the...
I mean, about yourself is what I'm saying. You might not even know what it is that you're needing, but you're...
Well, and that's the tricky thing, too. I mean, especially since... typically, the hurt or the fear will move to anger in, like, I think it's 0.2 seconds is what the studies show.
Wow.
And so what we're talking about here is how do I slow myself down? How do I get really mindful and really go into inquiry about what am I truly upset about? Right? And which is hard to do because in the heat of the moment when it's like my partner is being a jerk, right, and I'm upset with you, right? It's hard to slow down and think, okay, what's actually going on for me on that deeper place? Now, the beauty of it is that because you're coupled, you're not in it alone, right? That, again, back to this concept that we were talking about with the we, right?
Mm-hmm.
Couples need to build this owner's manual with each other, right? Because you know that expression, you know, you're pushing each other's buttons,
yeah.
Right? Well, the bad news is anybody you couple with is going to have a button. And you just got to accept that, right? One of the kind of the cute things Stan Tacton says is that relationships aren't Burger King. You don't get to have it your way, right? Yeah, if you don't like pickles, well, too bad. Your burger comes with pickles, right? Now, the good news, though, is that people only have about 2 or 3 or 4 buttons. And when you learn your partner's buttons, right, when you learn these deeper places of hurt, which you can find, you can discuss with each other and explore with each other when you're not fighting. It's a lot easier to do it then. Then when the fight starts to come, you can start to recognize this. I mean, one thing I really work on couples is studying each other's body language and recognizing classic moves, right? Because oftentimes couples come in and they're like, oh, we fought about this, and we fought about this, and we fought about that, and we fought about that, right? And the fact of the matter is if you look at the fight pattern, right, sort of the playbook of the fight, what moves do people always make? Couples are really only having one fight, and that the topic of conversation of the fight is just the adjutant that sends it into flare, and then they try to calm it down however best they can, and it goes into remission, and the next adjutant comes along and it flares. And when couples aren't aware of what's actually causing the fire and they're just trying to deal with the smoke, they just keep going into this cycle where they keep falling into the same fighting pattern over and over and over, and eventually frustration starts to set in, hopelessness can set in. And so this idea of really kind of sitting down and learning, oh, this is my partner's sensitivities. These are the things that push my button. And then these are the things that are the effective ways to help soothe and care for my partner. Right? The whole idea with the owner's manual is you need to know how to excite your partner, get your partner to come play with you. You also need to know how to calm your partner, soothe your partner, comfort your partner. If you don't know these things, and then you try to fall back on the golden rule of, oh, this is what I would do, you end up with frustration and fighting.
Yeah, what's right for you isn't necessarily right for me.
Yeah, exactly.
So you were talking about the fighting, and I know I've heard you talk about this before, but before you can even get down to what you're talking about, sometimes the fight, you're not even understanding how the fighting is, what's going on in the fight, or what you're, it's the style thing that I know that you had talked about before. So I wonder if you might address that behavioral style, since we were talking about the fighting, because I know, it's different for me. I know what I want to do when I'm having an argument or a fight with my husband, and, what my style is, and yet, he seems to, not want to deal with me in that way, and he wants to pull away and, go think about it for a while, and
yeah.
I just want to kind of
still
come at it, and we need to talk about this. And he's like, no, I need to be alone for a while. I think some of that happens too, and then that creates even more of a problem.
Absolutely. Yeah, I actually have a whole class on this, so let me get into this. Part of what you're looking at when you're breaking down a fight is you have to understand what's called system theory, that things are actually operating, well, in a way they're operating in a we, right? And so what happens is typically we think of things in terms of linear causality. A causes B causes C, right? And then if you try to apply that to couples work, whoever A is, that's the person who's the jerk, and that's the person that Craig needs to fix in order for the relationship to be good.
Of course you do. Right? You must fix him,
yes.
Please.
Right, yes.
Sorry.
Now, what's actually going on is what's called circular causality, that A causes B causes A causes B, right? So what happens in a fight is that there's some underlying distress that the couple doesn't know how to deal with, and it may not be apparent to the couple, actually. And each person has a different style of dealing with distress, right? So, for instance, you were talking about your husband kind of pulls away. So one of the very most classic styles is what's called the pursuer-distancer style, or often it's called the criticize-defend style. And in this style, distress comes into the relationship, and one partner ends up feeling some form of loneliness or abandonment, or like their partner doesn't care, like their needs aren't important to them. They're feeling taken advantage of or ignored or something like this. And there's this absence of connection, and there's this distress, and I want you to come be connected with me. And so this person will go into a pursuing role. Now, the other end then, the distancer, the way they're going to be wired is going to be more around self-soothing versus other-soothing. And so the withdrawer or the defender is going to kind of pull in to try to protect him or herself. And this person is typically going to be more rational-minded, like, why don't you just calm down, let's talk about this rationally. Lori, could you please be reasonable with me for a moment here? Right? Stuff like that. I don't know if that's what your husband says, but I'm just kind of riffing here. And so all of this, again, though, is in the interest of I'm trying to soothe and protect myself from the distress that I'm feeling. So now what's happening is, as this person kind of pulls away or gets defensive or withdrawn, it's going to trigger the partner A, right? And partner A is going to feel more abandoned, more lonely. It's going to have more thoughts about how my partner doesn't care about me. And so they're going to go into more pursuit or protest, right? Like a lot of the criticism and complaining and demanding that people do, you have to get as a couple that this is all a protest against an absence of this emotional connection that we were talking about, and that this is distressful. And so the person is desperately trying to get their partner to come be with them in some way. The way they're ending up shooting themselves in the foot, though, is that the criticisms or the demands or the complaints or whatever the case may be makes things unsafe for partner B. So partner B withdraws or gets defensive, clams up, right, gets super irrational, and they're doing this again to protect themselves because they don't feel safe because they're feeling like they're under attack and they're not good enough for their partner or they're inadequate in their partner's eyes or whatever the case may be. And that then is going to trigger another abandonment in their partner, and it's going to spin round and round and round. And the more each person tries to handle and cope with the distress in their way, the more triggering it's going to be for their partner. And like I mentioned before, couples are tied together, right? If it's not good for you, it's not good for me, right? And so if I withdraw from you to try to keep myself safe because you're feeling like I'm abandoning you, you're going to feel more abandoned and you're going to attack or criticize or demand more from me, right? So again, it's I think it's good for me, but if it's not good for you, it's not good for me.
So what's the way out of that?
The way out of that. Yeah.
I don't know. That sounded a little hopeless.
Well,
there's a way. I know you know it.
Seductive. It happens so quickly, so seductively. And I think one of the first things that couples need to come to terms with and have compassion about, you know, that's kind of one of the other values I talked about, is you have to have compassion. This is what it means to be human. We have needs. We all have triggers. We're going to trigger each other, right? And we just have to learn to accept this and learn to work with this, build this owner's manual of what to do with it. So one of the things is we have to have compassion for the fact that cycles are going to happen. There's a... the founder of Aikido, Morai Ueshiba, he was once quoted as saying, one of his students asked him, "Master, why are you never off center?" And his response was, "I'm off center all the time. I just correct so quickly nobody notices anymore." Right? Mm. And this is what couples have to recognize with working with their cycles. Right? I mean, I work with people to jump their cycles for a living. I am not free of falling into cycles. I fall into cycles all the time. I just simply got good at recognizing them and figuring out how to shift them. So the first piece is just naming it, right? And it's easier said than done because it can be so subtle and seductive. Like you're just in it. And when you're in it, it's hard to kind of pull yourself back and recognize it, which is why it's important when you're not in it to really kind of talk about it with each other, really map out, oh, these are the typical moves that we make, these are the thoughts that we have about it, right? And really get very clear about what the playbook actually is. Because the more you get clear about the playbook and you have the more awareness of, oh, these are the moves I make, these are the moves my partner makes, right? I always say this, she always says that, I'm always thinking this, she's always thinking that, right? Then you can start to work as a team to try to catch it. It's what I call the Rumpelstiltskin effect, right? If you can name Rumpelstiltskin's name, he can't take the baby away. Well, if you can start to name your cycle as a couple, can't take your relationship away. So I one of the things I help couples out with, or they can do at home, is really look at their fight and really start to see, is there a predictability about it, right? What do I always do? And you want to start on your side of the fence, right? You don't want to start, well, you know what you always do, honey, right? You want to start on your side of the fence. It's like, oh, I constantly keep making this move and then this move. And, oh, yeah, every time you make that move, it triggers me this way, and I deal with it by making this move. And, oh, yeah, I see now how it triggers you, right? And, again, just getting clear. I'm making my moves because this is what's going on, and I see that my moves actually make it worse for you, which makes it worse for me. The
which makes
second
it worse
step,
for us.
Yeah. So that's kind of those first two steps of like naming the cycle, breaking down the behaviors and the thoughts that happen with it. That's kind of the easier part. The more difficult part then is that idea of slowing yourself down and getting mindful of what's underneath. And what I would say, just kind of a couple of like cheat sheet questions that couples can start asking themselves,
mm-hmm.
is when they're looking at the fight, to kind of pull back. Well, it'll be easier when you're not in the fight, when you're reflecting on a fight, to pull back and start asking yourself this. Like, one, is what's going on for me a question of, are you there for me? Right? Another good question to ask is, am I being triggered by, do I matter to you? Another one can be, can I reach out to you? Another one could be, are you available to me? Another one that's very common is, do you respond to me? Can I rely on you? Another one is, will you pay attention to me? Another big one is, do I feel accepted by you? Another one I could ask is, do I feel alone? Am I, you know, is there a pain of loneliness here for me?
Are you asking these questions of yourself, or are you asking them out loud? Or
I would say, start with asking them of yourself, right? Start on your side of the fence, and then start to just go into dialogue with your partner, right? And really try to get clear with each other. What's the hurt underneath the frustration, right? Because typically what's going to happen with couples is when they're fighting, people are upset with each other, right? They're mad or frustrated or angry or annoyed or whatever the case may be. But again, it's like you wouldn't get mad if there wasn't something important going on, right? Like if I were to steal the pocket lint out of your pocket, you would just think I was weird, right? If I were to steal your husband away, that would be devastating, right? Because your husband is important. Your connection, your marriage to him is important. Your pocket lint isn't, right? So if you're upset with your partner about something, there's something important that typically is connected to some form of love and connection going on, right? Whether it be the abandonment loss, whether it be the fear or not feeling accepted by the partner, or feeling unfair, or feeling unloved, or whatever it might be. So you really want to just start asking yourself, what's actually the hurt that's happening for me here? What's the disappointment that's happening for here? What's the pain that's happening for me here? And start to share those things with your partner. And a lot of people, when they start talking about that level, they get really surprised, because at home when they're fighting, that never gets discussed, right? Oftentimes people don't really recognize how much pain their partner's in, because it's never shared. You know, especially the partners who are more withdrawing, they typically aren't really expressing the pain that they're having. And the partners who are more expressive and they're more in kind of the demand or the critical roles, there's a vulnerability and a fear that they have that they're typically not expressing. And those are scary to go down and find, but it's really important for couples to start asking themselves these questions. You know, how is this connected to emotional connection, to love? What's actually important here? Because if you think about it, dirty dishes in the sink, the fights that people have about stuff like that, right? How those fights just get blown way out of proportion, it can't be about dirty dishes or refrigerator doors or things like this, right? It's really tying into something much deeper for a couple.
It does seem sometimes that so many tiny things that it doesn't make sense to have a big blow up about would make sense. I think everybody experiences that. You know, it seemed like such a little thing, and then the next thing you know, it's a huge matter. So you're right, it's not that little thing.
And it just builds on itself, right? Like if I'm in relationship and there's like this event and then this event and then this event, and each event I start to feel like I'm not cared about, my needs aren't important, right? Well, then if there's something that I want to have happen and my partner doesn't do it, it's just one more reminder, right? That dirty dish in the sink is just one more example of how my needs don't matter. She doesn't care at all about me. She doesn't consider me at all, right? And so I start yelling at her about a dish in the sink, right? But it has nothing to do with a dish in the sink. It has to do with this feeling of I'm not feeling cared about here. I'm feeling neglected or ignored or whatever the case may be.
So So let me ask you this question. You know, at what point do couples need to start thinking about they need some help with this? You know, are there some warning signs that, you know, your relationship is really in trouble and you might need to seek some, not just do these kinds of things, but, you know, get some professional help from somebody like yourself.
And what to do about it, yeah.
Yeah.
So here's the tricky news is that John Gottman is a researcher up in Washington University. His research shows that couples typically wait an average of 6 to 7 years before seeking help for a problem. And the problem with that is that by that time the cycle has gotten so strong and the resentment can get really deep. Worst case scenario, people just start losing that feeling of love for each other. They start just feeling numb towards each other. It goes beyond even feeling hopeless. It's like hope doesn't even exist anymore. So what I would say is couples, again, that you would really want to look at this stuff and try to take care of it as early as possible. One of my favorite books that talks about this type of connection and working with cycles that I recommend to couples all the time is a book called Hold Me Tight by Sue Johnson. Hold Me Tight by Sue Johnson. That book does an excellent job at kind of mapping out this theory of love, about the importance of connection, mapping out the systems that happen in fights, and explaining how to start shifting that towards compassion and understanding and responsiveness towards each other. Right? This idea of, like, I know what your pains are, so when they come up, I don't have to ask you what's wrong, right? Because I already recognize them and I know what to do about them. The class that I mentioned earlier, the Hold Me Tight program, has a workshop series. It's an 8-week class that actually runs couples through the book. And the beauty of that class is that I give a lecture on the kind of important material on the book, but then we do in-class exercises where I can then rotate around and help couples really see the nuances of it, because some of it's hard to catch. If it gets to a point where couples are starting to feel like the fights are escalating out of control really quickly, it feels like, nothing I do ever works with my partner. If you start to feel resentment building up, then at that point I would say come in and start getting help, because the sooner you catch it, the earlier it is to clean it up, because it won't have the momentum, and it also, there won't be as many wounds to repair, right? The resentments won't be so deep. If you start feeling the place where you're feeling hopelessness and worst case scenario, you start to feel contempt towards your partner, either one of those two, you definitely need to get help right away, because the hopelessness and contempt will just lead to the death of the intimacy of the relationship. And it is really hard to resurrect a relationship after that. When it's still kind of in that hopeless, contemptual place, typically there's still enough sparks to blow on to get the fire going. But once someone feels like, I just don't have any love for you, not that it's not impossible. I've had couples pull through that point. But it just takes a lot more time and effort and commitment to move from that place back into love and intimacy.
So can I ask you one last question? I know we could talk all night about this topic, I'm sure. We are getting a little close on time here. But so if you were to give an example of, you know, a couple who understood this type of, you know, system here, or, you know, had the owner's manual for each other, like, obviously they wouldn't just never get in a fight. So,
no. Still happens.
So what would that look like? When you have two people who understand this and who do have the owner's manual for each other, you know, they've worked with you, they understand it. Just, you know, some easy example or something. I mean, how would that go? What would that look like versus the fights we all know that we've had with our partners that aren't working that way?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, let me give you kind of two angles to it. There's one that's kind of a preemptive approach, where you're so familiar that you just walk into it and you just lay out, hey, I'm feeling my cycle starting to happen. And the second one is, which is tends to be more common, the cycle started and that you have to get yourself out of it. So in the first example, so for instance with me, there's some childhood wounding around time stuff, right? And then and me feeling like my needs aren't considered, right? And so I'm one of those people, I can't stand tardiness, right? If I'm 5 minutes early, that means I'm late, right? I'm one of those guys.
Okay.
And especially around mealtime, it's really tricky for me, right? So if I'm supposed to meet you at dinner at 7 and I'm at the restaurant starving, and it's 7:05, I'm just burning inside, right? And I know this about me. It's a button that I have, and, you know, I mean, people end up being 5 minutes late. It's unavoidable. But it's not about being late, and it's not about me starving, waiting for you at the restaurant. It's about I don't feel like you care about me. If you really cared, you wouldn't leave me starving in a restaurant, right? You get kind of like the childhood wounding aspect of it there.
Mm-hmm.
And so for me, it's like my partner has to know if I'm going to be late, if I call Craig 5 minutes ahead of time and say I'm going to be 5 minutes late, I now feel considered. And then I'm hungry and I'm annoyed that I'm not eating when I want to eat, but I'm not losing it because the button, right, of not being cared about has been attended to, right? So it can get diffused early that way. Now, and so that's not always the case. Sometimes, you know, we can't be walking around 100% vigilant all the time. So there's a way that when the cycle happens, right? And so what's going to happen is people are just going about their business, something comes along, somebody wants to go, it's like, oh, well, you know, we need to go to the theater and meet our friends. And the other person's like, oh, well, let me just finish this thing up on my computer, right? And then partner A starts to get really upset, right? Well, you know, why didn't you finish that before? You've known for half an hour that we need to leave. It's 15 minutes to get to the theater, and it's 15 minutes till right now. What do you expect we're going to do, right? So it goes into that kind of distress mode.
Right.
If I know that my partner has some wound around this, right, around being on time and respectful, and or maybe that, you know, the people were meeting their boss and we're going to go out to the theater with my partner's boss and wife. If I recognize this, I'm like, my partner's attacking me, and I'm like, oh yeah, you know what? I'm totally sorry. I know about the time piece with you. Let's go right now. I can do this later, right? And I'm not going to take it personally around the attack. I'm just going to recognize, oh, my partner's attacking me. I've triggered them, right? Now, I'm not trying to be disrespectful with saying, oh, let me finish this up. I'm just engrossed in my thing. Right? I'm not trying to be a jerk, but I've come across that way. And I recognize, like, oh, yeah, my partner gets upset like that. I'm not going to take it personal. Right? Like when kids, for instance, you know, when you have a 3-year-old that gets upset with you, and the 3-year-old's like, oh, I hate you, Mommy and Daddy, you're the worst Mommy and Daddy ever, or you're the worst Mommy and Daddy, I'm never going to speak to you again, right? We don't go, oh, my God. You know, it's just like, oh, you love me, you're just upset, right? And it's not,
right.
It's that you have to do with your partner. It's like, oh, you're upset, right. You feel like I'm abandoning you, I'm not respecting you. And you address the actual need. Right? You don't get defensive about, you know, you're always late. I'm not always late. Was I late yesterday? It's like, oh, yeah, you're feeling like you can't depend on me right now. Does that help?
That's good. That's a really good example. Thank you. I know we kept talking about, you know, what happens when it goes wrong. So just kind of knowing, you know, what's it look like when it can go right, or how you can reset yourself, I think is helpful to know.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sorry to say that we are coming up on closing this very interesting conversation here, and I really appreciate everything you've shared with us. And you did mention that you had that workshop. Do you have one coming up sometime soon that you might be able to let us know about?
Yeah, the next Hold Me Tight program workshop will be on Thursday nights from 7 to 9, starting April 11th through May 30th.
Okay. And can you give your contact information if people are interested in finding out more about that or finding or being able
to reach
you?
Yeah, absolutely. My website is oakwindcouplescounseling.com, and it has information about the work I do, as well as there's a workshop page that has information about the class that we just mentioned.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for sharing that tonight, Craig. I think this will be great information for people to have. And for those of you who've been on the call before, you know that that you will get an opportunity to listen again. You will receive a downloadable link to this call so you can listen to it over and over again if you like and share it with others too. So please look out for that coming up soon. And just as a reminder, we do these calls each month, the first Thursday of the month usually, and we did postpone this one a little bit, but our next one will be the first Thursday in April. So please look out for information about that. And again, this is Dr. Lorianne Gertensen at the Gertensen Institute, and you can reach us at 510-526-1559 or by email at thegertenseninstitute@gmail. So thegertenseninstitute@gmail.com. So thank you again, and have a wonderful month, everyone. Hope you will join us again next month. Thank you, and good night.